Welcome to the Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for The Mandalorian on Disney Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking the season three finale. It's episode 8, chapter 24, The Return. Aaron, it's the return of the Mandalorians to Mandalore. How does that feel? Feel good?
You know, it's funny because like I didn't watch this episode when it first came out. I took a day. And I saw the early reviews, like, you know, some of our professional colleagues and friends, podcasting friends, were really like, oh, shaking their head and clucking their teeth, you know, sucking their teeth and clucking their tongues and be like, oh, man, this is really kind of disappointing into a down season. And talk of like hitting reset buttons and frustrations of seemingly, you know, waste of time and feckless Hollywood productions.
Wow.
And I'm okay. Open to that idea, because it's not like I, you know, like I've been hiding my opinion that like I have a lot of contempt for most of the modern Star Wars storytelling.
Sure.
Especially on Disney Plus. So I'm like, ah, shit to bed. This should be a nice disaster. And I watched this episode and I kept waiting for it to happen. And I'm like, nah, I actually like that finale. That's a pretty good. I mean, I have like the things that I don't like, I don't see anyone talking about. Like the thing that really sticks in my craw this season, and people at home probably can guess, is they didn't do anything with the cultural and religious dissonance that the Mandalorians should be feeling. Now, it's possible that Fellini and Favre and all those are like, well, that's there, but they had a bigger fish to fry, and we can in future seasons tell the story of maybe fracturing and or like a continuing built of tolerance, or we're telling a story of like how some movements can be on a knife point and leadership needs to step forward like the armor and be like, hey, you know, the way can be bigger and broader than what we've been observing, you know, tolerance. Mm-hmm. But I think it just feels right now where they just are not really interested in telling that story. It's like they don't understand the implications of the religious movement that the religious movements they're aping, you know. And again, it's not about their beliefs or something. It's about particularly their excommunication and their high control of their individuals' lives. And so that's the only, honestly, everything else I thought was pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any major problems with this finale. I think it's a perfectly good finale. A lot of the comments I've seen have made me think that people were kind of building up this finale into something that it could have been, but was not, and therefore they didn't enjoy it. Like, we didn't get anybody riding a mythosaur. We didn't get anybody... or we didn't have, you know, appearances of Thrawn to set up the Ahsoka stuff and a larger universe here and the return of the Imperials. All this stuff that, like, people were kind of expecting because they thought there were hints embedded in there. And there probably are hints embedded in there. They just don't go that far with it in this series. I feel like that is... I don't know. That's a shame that you would... be down on an episode and a finale for doing something or for something it didn't do, as opposed to stuff that it did do. And I'm not saying like it's perfect finale, but I think this was a perfectly serviceable finale. It leaves us in a place where we kind of were at season one with now Mando and Grogu, because Mando was just, you know, a bounty hunter at the beginning of that. And I'm sure this is going to like branch off into other places, and we're going to eventually get Thrawn in here. Like, with the way Disney's going, I half expect them to come back in season four, and we're like midway through a battle against Thrawn with Ahsoka and Mando and Grogu, right? Like,
right.
I fully expect that we're going to miss a portion of the story, and that we're not just going to come back with Mando and his feet kicked up.
Yeah.
But I don't know. People were, I think, building this up into too much, like wanting too much from this season, or. If not too much, then definitely specific things that they didn't get. And so there's a disappointment there.
I think that tracks. And I'll add a postulate to your theorem. I think, and this is going to be smugly self-serving, which is the best kind of content I know. I think that there is an inverse correlation for how many fucking Star Wars cartoons you've watched and what you thought of this season, this finale. because where you see a disappointing end to this grand tale of the Darksaber, I just see a MacGuffin that was destroyed and revealed for the Dumbo's feather it was. It's not the thing that Bo-Katan needed to unite her people. It's not the thing that they needed. But, like, y'all are fucking butthurt because you got 64 hours invested in this goddamn Darksaber.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So, like, not knowing any of that, it's the backstory, it's like, nah, it doesn't bother me. And there's, I saw a lot of people can, even some of the larger professional outfits I've seen, like, go into things like that, like, oh, where did the Mythosaur pay off? Or why did this pay off? Or why did we waste all that time with Pershing? When I'm like, that wasn't wasted time with Pershing. That's them trying to stitch together these two incomprehensible pieces of lore. They're trying to bridge the old trilogy and the sequel trilogy so they can tell, like, so they can get to, like, some kind of terra firma that makes sense and they can start telling tales on it. And I think the other thing is, like, people are... Well, it's so weird. It's such a weird complaint from people that I know to a moral certainty have seen all of the Disney Plus Star Wars stuff, which is about twice as much as I've seen, because I've skipped entire seasons, complaining about, like... And, you know, they just can't keep getting away with having the big character moments of, like, Grogu and Mando reuniting in another series, and I'm like... Well, that's something for a person who doesn't watch Boba Fett to complain about. But what the fuck are you? I mean, how is that an actual complaint? Because clearly, and I don't know. I will say that, like, Marvel does this better. It does seem that Marvel has a knack for knowing, okay, this is a Captain America movie. We can have Black Panther in it, and we can have Spider-Man in it, and we can have, but, like, we can't give in. We can't kill Aunt May in a Captain America movie. That just wouldn't do.
Sure.
You know, you kill Aunt May in a Spider-Man movie, right? Because that's core to Spider-Man story and start. So I can see calling foul about, like, this big emotional Grogu Mando reuniting happening on Boba Fett's watch. And they do need to tweak that. Yeah, but totally. Like, it's like I think that's the problem, is the baseline of this material is weak enough that maybe some of these people are just now getting to where we were 2 years ago with this project. We're like, this is kind of mostly crap and is not very great or imaginative storytelling. And that's already baked in for us. So when they do a perfectly competent season, which I actually thought this finale was amazing. Like, if you're a Star Wars nerd or a Star Wars little kid, this has got some of the coolest shit that you've ever seen happen in it.
For sure. Yeah.
But if you're still, like, huffing the copium that Star Wars is still, like, this big culturally relevant force and it's, like, great storytelling and, like, all this mythic, like, yeah, maybe this is a disappointment. But, like,
well,
I said,
well, some of the problem I had with earlier seasons, well, seasons one and two, is so many of those episodes were just side missions, and so much of it was cotton candy that wasn't meant to add to the story, that really was just there as something that felt like fun, but ultimately filler. And this season did almost none of that. And so I was much higher on this season as a whole than I was on the previous seasons.
It's so weird because I saw a lot of people cite the, like, Jack Black episode. And that's
world building, man. That is telling a story about the New Republic that is more subtle and more interesting than any of the storytelling done in the first two seasons.
Thank you, because that's what I kept the sightings of wasted time and the fact that, like, oh man, Mando, it doesn't even feel like it's his show. He's the main character. I just felt like all that rang hollow with the other material that we've seen, and the stuff that kept consistently seeing as, like, this is a waste of time that didn't go anywhere. I'm like, I don't know. It felt like it did a lot for the setting, you know?
Yeah, the setting of the galaxy there. I'm maybe I just don't appreciate the same things. I'm not looking for the same things out of Mando that most Mando fans are. I always, in fiction, I appreciate well-told character stories that are influenced by what those characters are feeling, what they're thinking, and an interesting world. And I think Mando has always kind of flirted with the interesting world stuff, but the storytelling, I feel, was pretty lacking in the first two seasons. And here, I think they've stepped up. Their world building has encompassed, you know, the entire season, as opposed to, like, oh, here's world building where we just visit a different planet where Grogu can eat some stuff, you know? Now they're trying to tell stories with that world building stuff. And I think that's a big step up for me.
One other complaint I saw, and maybe I can get on board with this one too, is that the Children of the Watch were more interesting the less we knew about them. And the more we know about them and Mandalorian culture at large, the more it seems kind of like this doesn't hang together very well as a philosophy or as a... And I kind of get that because there's two ways you can go with this world building. You either have to go like George Martin style, like fucking writing encyclopedias and naming like the dessert forks that they used at the dinner table, or you keep it breezy, keep it moving. You flash out a little crazy thing like, whoa, what could that possibly mean? And you don't ever reference it again for a couple. You either have to be mysterious or you have to be meticulous. And I feel like The Mandalorian is kind of like in a Saturday morning cartoon style, trying to split the difference between that. And maybe. But I don't know.
I
will say that, I feel like that I left this season with The Mandalorian's reputation as peerless warriors intact. They're just awesome. I do buy the fact that they probably united are a tough nut to crack. So at the end of the day, that Mandalorian mystique that had kind of been eroded by most notably Boba Fett in everything that he's done in the in the original trilogy and his disastrous a solo show, quote unquote solo show. He's just been just bumbling fuck. And these Mandalorians, even the masked one, the unmasked ones, they all pull together and kick a lot of ass in this episode.
Yeah, I've got some minor problems with this finale that we could talk about in the scenes they're in, but they're all like pre-established ideas that maybe they're doing a disservice to, and they're minor things. They're not like, oh, they've told this story about this world and then they totally changed it here. But we'll talk about it when we get there. Overall, I thought this was a pretty good finale. It was certainly exciting. It was certainly action-packed and beautiful. I mean, that cave scene, honestly, is one of the prettiest things I've seen on The Mandalorian. It may be in its entirety. I don't know. That cave scene really blew me away with all its vegetation and stuff.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Different kind of location from what you typically get in Star Wars, right?
True. They mixed their cave biome and their forest biomes.
If they could have had it snowing, oh my God.
A light dusting of snow.
Anyway, maybe we should talk about the specifics of the episode in the recap.
Let's do it.
We have to rid this planet of enemy sorcerers. We'll be right back. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. the thrills of King's Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
For Prestige, me and Aaron are still extending our Shogun Afterglow with part 3 of our discussion of the 1980s TV miniseries. Last week absolutely shocked our sensibilities with Lord Toranaga doing the tango. What delights and horrors will await us this week?
Then for Pulp, this Friday join us for our latest prep session for House of the Dragon Season 2 as we take another look at the key differences between the text of Fire and Blood and the on-screen action for Season 1, and what they mean for the characters, story, and setting. Get your Valyrian steel sharpened for the new season.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. The Beskar belongs to the Mandalorians. This podcast belongs to you. Here's more Tribe of Two. All right, the Mandos run from Moff Gideon's troops. If you recall, Gideon had... I have a mea culpa to do here. I totally mistook the jetpack Imperial Troopers. I don't know what to call these guys. They're just regular-ass Imperial Troopers, apparently. They're not Dark Troopers.
We got feedback on this.
I think the Dark Trooper is Moff Gideon himself.
I think that's correct, but also fuck off trying to I don't think they made that distinction very, very well.
Yeah, it's a little ambiguous, but I think I watched it again and I'm like, okay, I can see that totally being the case, and it makes a lot more sense.
I feel like he should have said behold the first of a new class of Dark Trooper or something. But when he's got his hands out and is like, how do you like the new Dark Troopers? And it's like, okay, well, you're the only dark one. But I don't know. I don't want to get racial here, Moff Guardian, but you're the everybody else wearing masks.
Aren't you a little light for a Dark Trooper? Is what I'm saying to the other ones. You're right.
He is
the Dark Trooper.
Having a colorism debate right in the middle of a Star Wars show.
Going for Han.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I also think the episode I don't know. I feel like I wish the other thing I wish is because these and I don't know elite stormtroopers with jetpacks that look like Mandalorians. I wish they'd said something about their armor, like they're using a Beskar alloy, because their armor is shit. Their armor is maybe one HP over a standard stormtrooper's armor, and you compare that with what a true Mandalorian armor can do.
Yeah,
and it's bullshit. I think they built up these guys.
In this episode, they kind of upgrade them a little bit too. Like when Mando's fighting them, they're taking some shots. It feels
he
maybe
also
they
is
have Beskar.
Weaponless. They can stand up against. They can 2v1 a Mandalorian for 30 seconds before getting eviscerated if he has no weapons. But
yeah. So I don't know. I think it makes more sense if he's talking about himself in that scene. At least that's what I would hope, because otherwise the power creep is off the scale.
Now, he is an incredible, I don't think he's anything great in terms of being a warrior, but he holds his own against the best. Uh-huh. So, that Dark Trooper suit is the cat's pajamas.
Yeah, I mean, he's half human, half droid in that scenario, and imagine if he had also been half Jedi.
Mm.
That's a real problem, so it's probably a good thing they destroyed
those clones. Triple
threat. Yeah. The other thing that happens here is Bo tells Axe to bring the troops down before they lose communications. And he's heading up there.
Some people were nitpicking the fact that, how can the Mandalorians go to space with their backpacks? And I'm like, they have enough propellant.
Yeah, it's all about Delta V.
We know that their masks form perfect seals, as implausibly as that is. They can survive the vacuum of space, and they have a rocket that can defy gravity.
Yeah, I mean, don't think about it too hard, right?
Well, plus, like, I think people think that space is, like, a long ways away. And it's like, because they're like, oh, they ran out of fuel chasing this giant beast. Like, that giant beast, I could easily imagine, has a nesting site 60, 70, 80 miles away. Mm-hmm. Space is just, like, 15, 20 miles straight up.
Yeah.
Just boom, you get there. You get there. Mm-hmm. Just 15, 20 miles. It's, like, closer than your average supermarket in America. Just hop on, you're there. Like, it's not hard. It's not hard.
Sure, sure. It seems like they've got enough thrust to get him there, so why not? Mando tries to escape the custody of two Imperials who are escorting him. He fails, but IG-12 is there to save him, and Mando tells Grogu, we have to take out Moff Gideon, and Grogu's in. I like this fight. I think it's, disarmed Mando is kind of fun to watch.
He cannot be stopped by blaster fire or literal fire. The flamethrowers the Mando's armor is 50% Beskar, 50% asbestos. because not even his cape burns. Like, that's the crazy thing.
He's wearing a cloth bodysuit or whatever here, and it doesn't burn. His cape doesn't burn.
Right, right. Yeah,
I think the choreography here is really good, though. Like, all those flamethrower, shots, he stays in them for, like, a second or maybe two, but then he's rolling down on the ground and tripping these guys and aiming their weapons elsewhere. It's really good choreography.
And it's brutal. He's, like, snapping necks. Mm-hmm. And, like, when he gets a hold of a dagger in the later shield fight, he's, like, just going at these guys' major arteries. Like, boom in the inner thigh, boom in their armpit. And it's, like, you can't see it in their stormtroopers. But, like, this shit would be rated R if they weren't wearing armor.
Mm-hmm. I really love all the fat roll stuff he's doing. Like, the, Bloodborne stuff.
Yeah, fat rolling. He's way over his carrying capacity.
Totally.
Fat rolling.
What is Grogu spraying on him here? Is it water? Is it
I think it's like some kind of fire retardant, which is funny because clearly his costume's pre-soaked in it. You're good. But it's just cute, especially when, he's getting all choked up and it looks like the troopers finally got the upper hand on him, and just you see this giant metal claw grab the stormtrooper's hand and it's like no. Mm-hmm. No, it's just every time Grogu does the voice yes or no, it's pretty funny or touching.
Sure. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, and they're like, we're gonna take a stand against mm-hmm. Moff Gideon. We're gonna confront him in his unknowable amount of clone tanks. Mm-hmm. Once and for all, and we'll never will see him again.
Of course, a man who has clone tanks as backups for himself, doesn't have cloud backups of those clone tanks. He's just got them all local.
No offsite backups.
No.
If anything, we know he's a rash man who doesn't make plans.
Yeah, I don't. That was gonna be one of my big questions at the end. Is Moff Gideon actually dead? But with cloning scenarios, the answer is almost no.
It's like, a lot of this comic book shit, a lot of Star Wars stuff is kind of like Westworldian in the, like, is anyone ever really gone?
Right.
But again, they resurrected Palpatine's ass that got thrown down a whole Death Star reactor shaft and exploded in dark energy.
Mm-hmm.
But,
anyway,
but also we found the old Sheev Fox, so maybe they had all kinds of genetic samples of him. Like half the cocktail dresses and Coruscants got a viable DNA sample. That's the other thing we found out about the old Sheev Palpatine. He gets around.
Apparently, Mando tells Bo they're going after Gideon. Bo says, "I'm going to get my people out of there," and they fly to the surface. And then fighters and bombers are launched from Gideon's facility up toward the Mandos in orbit.
Oh, I also want to say that, like, I just watched a particularly good episode of Airwolf. I do this whole other side podcast project called Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Where I watch a bunch of 80s action TV shows with a millennial buddy of mine. And one thing that's really admired about the episode is how malleable the Airwolf theme is. Like, its baseline is the synthesis. Dun, 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 dun. But they also can, like, sub that synth out for, like, genuine horns or strings to, and, you know, play major, minor versions of it and, like, upbeat, triumphant ones. The Mandalorian theme is a lot like this, because when we go into credits after he's like, we're going to have to be brave and kick this Moff's ass in, kid. And it goes to the return, like they hit you with like a really fucking impressive version of the Mandalorian theme. It's like it's a Mandalorian theme that's ready to march out of the credits and kick some ass.
Yeah, I think the best thing to come out of Mandalorian is the music.
It really is good. It's like one of the first things since Duel of the Fates that I feel like has advanced the state of the art of Star Wars musical themes.
Indeed. Yeah, it's got a different flavor to it than typical Star Wars music, but it's also similarly triumphant and can be romantic in some ways. It's very versatile.
Yeah, it's great.
Gideon sees Mando has escaped and suits up to take care of him.
I love how he's tracking the Mandalorian and Grogu through his vast palace, and Grogu and the Mandalorian are represented by a big red dot and a smaller green dot. I just really like that attention to detail.
Then Mando asks R5 to help him locate Gideon's command center. And as he sneaks through the facility, R5 flies into the facility, jacks into the computer, and sends the command center's location to Mando. And they head for it.
I have a question. As a fellow long-term Star Wars fan who hasn't watched the cartoons... Have they ever referred to these computer links as scomps before, or use scomp as a verb?
Maybe. Not in, like, the mainline movies or anything, certainly, but, like...
I wonder if it was written, like, an SCOM link, and the guy just read it as scomp link, and... Because, like, I this could be, like, really deep lore that I'm not familiar with, but,
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would naturally do. If I see SCOM, I'm not going to say SCOM every time. Probably going to say SCOM.
Yeah, you're going to, it's like SQL. You know, eventually you're going to get the sequel. I thought that was pretty cool. If this is the first instance of scomping, using it as a verb, well done.
I like it. I don't know that a droid vehicle, in this case a droid, can walk silently. Like, if you're trying to sneak around this facility and Mando's tiptoeing, what's the point when you got IG-12 clomping around back there?
Maybe scomp is how a droid scamps. It's halfway between a scamp and a stomp. I need you to scomp into the base and tell me where the thing.
Because they can't tread lightly.
Mm-mm.
They just scomp around everywhere. And then Axe, he's still flying up to the fleet. He warns him that the fighters are coming, says, go to the surface, leave the capital ship behind as a decoy. And he gets to the ship, he takes control of it, everybody else takes Landers down, and then the TIEs attack his ship. This is really cool. I like this stuff a lot. There's just the visuals of it, you know?
Yeah, like they're... Oh, I mean, it does look great.
These TIEs coming out of the clouds, the storm, and then just like doing bombing runs on the surface of this capital ship. Super cool.
Yeah, and the idea that like the planet is what's important. This is our home and we're taking a final stand. It's kind of like burn the boats when you get there on a settlement to commit to everybody. But like, yeah, just sacrifice the capital ship and we'll just bet the farm on winning the land war. And then the way that Axe uses the capital ship to kind of like put an exclamation point on the victory, I thought was really cool too.
Yeah, when I realized what he was going to do with that ship, I was like, okay, that's cool. The thing is, they didn't do, in my mind, a great job of setting up the aerial battle as hopeless. What I wanted to see is dozens and dozens of TIEs that would overwhelm, you know, the maybe dozen or so of the whatever Mando ship that Bo was piloting, right? If it looked like it was overwhelming odds, I would have been more like, okay, abandon the air battle and just go like use the capital ship as decoy. But they only show like 12-ish TIEs, half of those are bombers. They're not going to be as maneuverable. Like, and based on what I saw on Navarro, when Mando and Bo were fighting the pirates and stuff, I think they could probably take them. I don't know why they have to abandon the sky so quickly.
Yeah.
But whatever. Maybe the idea is, like, the real goal is here on the planet.
Because that's the thing, is like, that would tie up a number of Mandalorians above, and then they might lose the ground war, which is, again, the whole point.
Sure.
And I guess it's like, when they say fleet, they mean one strike cruiser, which is a pretty small capital ship, and a whole bunch of essentially Blackhawks or Chinooks, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so it's like, it's not like we need to save the fleet because if we win the Battle of Mandalore, we have to defend Mandalore. It's like, you got like a light carrier at best with a couple of APCs. It's good. It's good. It's fine for private army, but it's you got to win the planet.
Yeah, for sure. Mando coordinates with R5 to get through a hallway full of Imperial troops. Mouse droid spots R5 and sets off an alarm. Mando clears the hallway, and then R5 takes off. And he enters the clone room, which is full of Gideon clones, and he destroys them all.
I thought the shield fight was pretty incredible. It was savage. It was like the Mandalorian weaponless taking down these guys as fast as possible with just, you know, knives and blunt instruments.
Well, I love the way he upgrades his weapons as he gets. He's like progressing through,
right?
Some kind of like weapon upgrade tree or something.
Yeah,
he's Baron got a knife to knife. Start. He then gets like some kind of electro stick thing.
Uh-huh.
Then he gets a blaster, finally, and a shield.
Riot shield. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool. I thought that the R5 being menaced by these mouse droids is pretty funny too. I like droid humor.
Sure, sure. These mouse droids are silly fun.
They're wired with like cop lights. I think it's like it's light danger because, of course, he's an astromech droid. He can just turn on his jets and leave, just bone out. So
yeah, and the mouse droids don't have any weapons or anything. They're not gonna harm him. The worst they can do is call in the reinforcements. Which it's surprising to me that that's not what these troopers do in this hallway. Like if they see their buddies getting killed. Call in the reinforcements to flank Mando here, right? They're all like, open the door, I can't. Well, call some people.
Oh, see, I thought the whole idea was R5 was shutting that shit down. Like, they couldn't do a comm or open the shield doors because R5 had locked it down. I mean, if you've got a droid, astromech droid fucking hacking your computer, maybe. I mean, they're just pushing a button.
To me,
at the
that's
end of the
like
day.
Saying you couldn't use a walkie-talkie because a droid was messing with your PC or something.
Well, I mean, that the wisdom of the Imperials wiring all of their military hardware through sockets that are in unsecured locations that any droid can get into. I mean, yeah, but that's been baked into the series for a long time.
Oh yeah, since the first movie.
Yeah, because maybe you could buy that he could override a garbage disposer. But he can just open up cells in a secured detention facility on the Death Star from the hangar? The fuck? Yeah, no.
Yeah, probably could have blown up the station, just caused the reactor to go critical and just take out the whole thing.
Yeah, if Luke had thought to ask, R2 could have done it, but he's not gonna volunteer.
Okay, another nitpick here. Why is Mando desperately calling for R5 to open the final shield when he has not dispatched the troop that he's dealing with in the current shield chamber?
I was wondering that too.
He's calling it like it's time sensitive. Like, if you don't open this fucking shield, I'm gonna get killed.
He's setting him up for a sick combo. He keeps on like dodging. Like, I'm gonna go flying knee. It's gonna knock into this guy. It's gonna tin him. Ah, fuck. He's moved out of position. All right. I'm gonna roll between his legs. I'm gonna grab him by his dick. I'm gonna throw him into the other guy. Ah, shit. He's rolled out of position. And he's just like he's got to get that door open. His combos are closing.
I guess so.
Yeah, he's like, oh, well, you want 2v1?
He's actively taking fire.
Yeah, you want to go 3v1 just for shits and grins?
Yep, apparently. But it was a cool scene. I mean, obviously, it's very evocative of the Duel of the Fates portion of episode one.
And they're also showing a lot of simpatico. I noticed them showing a lot of simpatico stuff between the Mando and Bo-Katan. Like, he picks up double guns and goes guns akimbo, which is kind of her signature style. And I thought that was kind of like, that was pretty cool. They're showing like Flash, and then they, of course, come together like mommy and daddy to protect their son, who ends up protecting theirs at the end. There's a lot of things linking Bo and Mando together, which if you're a Bo Mando shipper, like I might be, I like that. I like that.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Speaking of Bo, her group takes refuge in some surface caves, which contain indigenous plants that were farmed by the surviving Mandos over the years. The other Mandos reach the surface, and Bo's group goes out to meet them, and they all fly down to Gideon's facility, start fighting with a bunch of Imperial jet pack troopers. This is the super pretty location I was talking about before. So one of the other things I think this season has done super well is, and maybe this is done in other places in the Star Wars canon, but for me, having not seen those, it's really painting a solid picture of Mandalore, like the history of Mandalore, what happened there, how people survived both during and after, with either running or staying and hiding, and like how it could potentially come back from that.
I did think that some of this ecology I wasn't sure about. When the guy's like, he's like, how are these things growing? He's like, these are the indigenous plants of Mandalore. They've been long dormant. They came back. And I'm like, okay. So you have a whole bunch of invasive Imperial species that choked out the life of Mandalore. But what allowed the Mandalorian plants to thrive is their planet being glassed and turned into a toxic, radioactive, war-torn. Like, what the fuck? That's not how indigenous species work. It's like, you know how we can save the indigenous species of Hawaii? They're all under constant threat from invasive species of man. We should just napalm all the islands.
I mean, isn't literally that what Hawaii is actively doing all the time to itself?
I don't know. I don't know. Volcano's going to volcano. But like, yeah, we should we should help it along. It's taking Hawaii is taking far too long defending itself. Just napalm all the islands, and then that will be the ideal environment for the indigenous species to retake. But I don't know. It's a little bit like, like when the pandemic happened and people were on lockdown, reduced travel, like species that you have never seen, like in certain areas come back, because it's like there's a little bit of like, oh, if you give them room, they can flourish. But
yeah, it's like iRobot. Yeah. Not iRobot. Will Smith.
Ali,
not Bicentennial Man.
Independence Day.
No. Yeah, it's like Ali, where he starts a garden in his subterranean caves.
I Am Legend.
Yes, thank you. Okay. I Am Legend. You're gonna see deers walking down the street. You're gonna see vampire
giant
monsters. I don't
Godzilla's
know.
Bursting out of mountains that have been just chilling there. So got woke up by a light and bombardment.
Omega Man is the version I was trying to think of. And then Mando enters another chamber, gets trapped inside. Gideon shows up, tells Mando that he sucks for destroying his Force-attuned clones. Mando fights Gideon with the Praetorian guards ganging up on him just for fun. And then Grogu shows up and draws those Praetorians away to even the odds a bit.
Mr. Esposito seems to be having fun, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Like this is kind of like oddly pissy entrance where he's like, god damn it, I had my perfect clones and you killed them, man. It's like, is that kind of like the tone of it? It was pretty funny.
Yeah, he gets to show unrestrained emotion, which is not something they often let Gustavo Fring do.
That's what it is. It's just like, I'm used to his baseline being so turned down that like when he's like in a fit of pique, it seems like he's throwing a bit of a tantrum.
Right.
And boy, howdy, does he just kick Mando's ass, and then the Praetorian guard tag in, and just when they get him into Paz Vizsla patented grip of Smulti Spear Doom, Grogu comes in with spamming the no button, and I thought he was just going to like fully embody the Force. I thought he was going to go full, like just start throwing things around. But no, he's still kind of fragile. Like, he distracts the Praetorian guard and they chase him and start trying to hurt him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it better this way. It doesn't feel like it artificially prolongs the fight. It feels like maybe the odds were overwhelming, and so separating them makes sense.
Yeah, and it's also like just when I'm like, wow, this is a lot of menace to put on a baby. Like when the door closes and like Mando is like anguished because he can't get there in time, mm-hmm. and like a blast door is now between him and his son and three Praetorian guards, which handed the toughest Mandalorian with these scenes ass last week. Mm-hmm. They cut to a scene of Grogu essentially having fun. Like he's giggling.
Oh, yeah.
He's laughing at the Praetorian guard as he's force jumping into ceilings and all that kind of stuff. So it's like not too much danger.
No, there's just a little bit of fun to be had.
You gotta make sure that like, sure, the baby could die at any time, but he's having a good time. He's having the best time in this mortal danger.
Here's a question I have. So they show Mando with the jetpack of an Imperial trooper. He's wearing it in this scene.
Yeah.
It looks so weird on him because it's all
white.
It does.
It looks like they forgot to render it.
Right, right. This is a pre-viz jetpack that they've got
texture.
To complete. But then he never uses it over the course of this fight or this entire episode.
Oh,
so what's the point of sticking that on his back?
Does he not do a jet-assisted knee kick at all? I thought maybe there was one time.
It. Maybe.
Where, like, he just has to have it to fight like a Mandalorian?
I suppose. I mean, it's a good addition. I like the idea of mm-hmm. sticking one of these Imperial Trooper jetpacks on him, but have him use it if you're going to have him put it on.
No, you're right. I just assumed that there was something, but I'm mentally replaying it, and I couldn't swear that he did.
Yeah.
So
I can't swear that he doesn't use it for a kick, but honestly,
I thought maybe, or like when he's trying
essential.
To leap to get to Grogu before they hit him with the cable. Maybe he was trying to, but
there's some a lot more midair jetpack fighting with Bo and her group. This is super cool.
Yeah, I want to say that like I thought all of the Mandalorians, like that line in the scene previous where the armorer, you know, it's kind of like an on your left moment from Endgame where it's like Bo-Katan, your reinforcements have arrived, and then like the jump doors open and just like clouds of Mandalorians come out and like the armor jumps in after her and Bo-Katan's at the lead and she draws a darksaber and like does the charge moment. It's
yeah,
just like
fucking cool.
It's really fucking cool.
Yeah.
And then, like a wave of these not so dark troopers respond to them and they're meeting them and Bo-Katan's just slice them in midair. And
I love the first person stuff that they do with this midair fight. There's a huge sense of kineticism and like speed and just like frenetic nature to this fighting with so many troops in the air with like all this momentum and it feels like everything is under control, but just barely.
And it's like uniquely Mandalorian way to fight. And like as good as these not so dark troopers armor and training probably is, they just can't compete. And there's like you said, that first person stuff is cool. There's one shot where like Bo is charging and she like slices a guy, and then from our perspective she like looks down between her legs and like fires off a rocket and blows some other fucker up. And it reminded me a lot of like how I always visualized those Ender game scenes where it's like there is no up or down, it's just 360 multi-vector combat coming fast and furious, and it's really cool and a lot of inventive and brutal. Like they're just like dismembering guys and like throwing them off ledges and blowing them up, but it's undeniably cool.
Yeah, so one time the Mandos didn't forget that they have jetpacks on
right
during a battle. But you know, there's not a ton to say about that stuff. It's just kind of fighting in the meantime. And IG-12 is rapidly dismembered by Praetorians, but Grogu proves hard to catch. This is the scene where he's flipping around in the lighting fixtures and all that stuff. Then Mando continues getting his ass kicked by Gideon, and Bo jets down to the fight and tells Mando to go save Grogu. She'll take over from here. And Bo and Gideon fight with their energy weapons.
Yeah.
Aaron, let me ask you this. Do you remember... Think way back to the 70s, the late 90s. Do you remember when lightsabers used to be special? when they were a weapon that you couldn't block.
Yeah.
You couldn't stop a Jedi from coming through your blast doors because they would just burn a hole. And they were the only ones who had them.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt Like, this is some next level weaponry. Now, literally every bad guy has either armor that can block lightsabers, a weapon that can block lightsabers, a weapon that functions exactly like a lightsaber but looks different. There is nothing special about a lightsaber anymore. Yeah. It kind of bums me out.
Yeah, down to like a stormtrooper has like a baton,
mm-hmm.
you know, like a rank and file. Because, yeah, like Moff Gideon, like if it was just Moff Gideon, like, okay, he's got a fucking pure Beskar suit of armor. He's implemented all this Mandalorian technology into it. Like, sure, he's got something that could break. And Praetorian Guard, it makes sense that like the guy who murdered the Jedi would have some weapons capable of stopping a Jedi, or else what's the point? But yes, yeah, like, yeah, it's they're a victim of their own success, I guess, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I just
because like if every time a Jedi shows up, it's the other guy's ass, which it should be, unless you're going against a dark Jedi or I don't know, a whole fucking battalion of the Emperor's best troops. Then it's like every fight is pretty boring. The Jedi comes and it's time mm-hmm. to close up shop. So but yeah.
This is supposed to be after the Jedi have been basically wiped out. I don't know why everybody's still concerned about having these Jedi fighting weapons.
Yeah, but Luke's got a whole school. He's training them up again. So, like, it makes sense the Empire would want to have that technology. But, yeah, everybody having it.
I just wish that they hadn't done this power creep thing where everybody now has super weapons in their hands. It always felt special to me when a Jedi showed up. Because not just their powers, what they could do with that, but their weapon.
Mm-hmm.
The way Kenobi talked about it was so rare, and it was so like powerful, and there was a connection there to your weapon, and now like everybody's got them, whatever.
Yeah.
So Mando and Grogu take out the Praetorian guards together. It's a cute little tag team scene I enjoyed.
You did good, kid.
Yeah, using his force powers.
It was funny because it's largely just playing keep away. Like every time the Praetorian Guard would try to go for their magic lightsaber counter weapon, he would just like force push it away.
Yeah, it's
or
great.
Or force strip him.
Then Axe's capital ship crashes to the planet. He's guiding it in. He's going to take out Gideon's base with it. And he tells everyone to get the hell out. But Gideon and Bo are too busy fighting to get the hell out. Gideon destroys the Darksaber and probably Bo's saber hand along with it. He's about to defeat her until Mando and Grogu show up to get her back.
Yeah, like I said, I saw a lot of people talking about how there was a visceral dislike at the Darksaber being disposed of in this manner. But like, I thought it was a great point that, you know, Gideon's like, you Mandalorians are weak once you lose your trinkets. Like, you know, they're like dependent on this Dumbo's elephant. They don't believe in themselves. The Mandalorians themselves together are not enough. And Bo-Katan retorting that Mandos are actually stronger when we're together. We don't need the trinkets. And then them combining forces to kick his ass, I thought was like, I mean, what the hell else are you going to do with the Darksaber? Oh, whoever holds it gets a real Mandalore. We're going to do this Arthurian bullshit. Like, no, this is like probably the best thing that could happen to the Darksaber.
Yeah, I mean, I take exception to what he says about the Mandalorians being weak without their trinkets, because so is he. I mean, look at season two.
True.
The ending of season two, when he was pathetic without his dark troopers. And what's he sitting in right now? He's sitting in a full suit of armor. Well, take it off and let's see how tough you are.
True. He's literally Bruce Wayne telling Iron Man he's nothing right. without his fancy toys. Like, okay, sure, buddy.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Whatever. This guy talks a bunch of smack. He can't back any of it up because he gets killed in this episode.
Yes.
So the problem I have with the Darksaber being destroyed is how it's destroyed, I guess. You can just crush this Beskar weapon with
your
suit.
Is it got a Beskar hilt?
Yeah. Yeah, the Darksaber has a Beskar hilt.
Can a Beskar gauntlet with Beskar servo motors crush a Beskar lightsaber hilt?
Sure.
I guess I don't have a problem with that.
It does it at least has to do irreparable damage to her hand, right?
Oh, I do think through her hand. You understand that her I understood that her hand was probably broken.
I would think it would come off. I think the fingers would just pop off.
It just pop like a packet of ketchup.
Yes. Yeah, you stomp on a packet, like you scomp onto a packet of ketchup.
See, she was from an obscure Mandalorian tribe that practiced the ancient technique of Beskar ossification. So when she was a teenager, all of the bones of her gun hand were replaced with Beskar. So you see, if you watched 17 hours of cartoons, Jim, you would understand that your question's really stupid.
Damn, yeah. I'm just stupid, I guess. Yeah, when she drinks mythosaur milk. That's how our bones get so strong.
Well, you just watch the cartoons. You'll learn something.
Anyway, Axe crashes the capital ship into the base, and he abandons ship. And Gideon continues to fight Bo, Mando, and Grogu.
I actually was kind of like, damn, how do I feel about Axe? This is Mando's getting kind of body count heavy. They killed off Paz. Axe kind of his opposite side number. He's going to do his heroic sacrifice, and then oh, of course. He's got a jetpack. He's just going to shoot out a window and jump out.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Makes sense. He was just staying on there long enough to aim it.
Yeah. Write it down. This is the ad break. We will return. I have spoken. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. Madman and father of Mad Max, George Miller, is back with another apocalyptic tale from the Australian wastelands.
This time we're getting a prequel featuring the origin story of Charlize Theron's character Furiosa, starring the Queen's Gambit's Anya Taylor-Joy in the title role and the mighty Thor Chris Hemsworth as the warlord Dr. Dementis. Furiosa promises more high-octane, slightly radioactive action and fun.
Furiosa drives into theaters on May 24th, and we'll have our spoiler-free thoughts and impressions of the film as well as a discussion of trailers and upcoming movies for everyone. But if you want to ride with us the full length of the podcast on the eternal highways of Valhalla, shiny and chrome, you're going to have to be a club member.
Join today at support.baldmove.com. Get our full discussion of Furiosa and many more first-run films, plus tons of other bonus podcasts and ad-free feeds.
Support.baldmove.com. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you.
This podcast is in your care. Welcome back to Tribe of Two.
So Gideon continues to fight Bo, Mando, and Grogu as the explosion from the crash engulfs everything and everyone, and they would have been killed, but Grogu uses the Force to shield them, and Gideon is engulfed in flame.
I was kind of moved by this. First of all, it's an insane visual. The backdrop of this strike cruiser falling in, you can just see it falling into the canyon, and you know it's like, well, it's going to hit the bottom eventually. And, and
I love the way when it gets to the entrance of that cavern, it hits the rock, and the rock just moves out of the fucking way, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
There's nothing stopping this thing from going down.
This is a giant fucking duranium arrowhead coming into the heart, open wound of the planet. And Grogu and Bo and Mando all kind of team up. And I just like how the Mandalorian and Bo-Katan, like, it's so pathetic, right? Bo with her little shield. They see this wall of flame coming, and they're instinctively trying to protect the baby, right? I'm like, if they're trying to perpetrate, like, this is going to do anything. And of course, Moff Gideon just, Beskar armor at all evaporates, right?
Yeah, he's
and
gone.
They cut to the center of it, and Grogu is going full on Groot, hold the self-sacrifice. And he's just keeping this wall of force, protecting his mom and his dad. And I thought that was really cute. It was,
Fuck yeah. I was cheering for him. He apparently like really leveled up with Luke, right? We haven't seen him use his powers in a very evident or very strong way.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the first time we see it. And then, you know, he kind of drops down. He's not going immediately to sleep anymore.
Yeah. Which shows the power level he's got. And I really like that. And it's like, maybe some people would be like, that don't believe that he could stop a ball of nuclear fire that strong, but it's like, that's the thing about the Force, it's magic. It's an inexhaustible source of power for those who can channel it, and this is baby Yoda. I believe to save his parental figures, he can do whatever he needs to do.
Yes, I believe it too. I think Luke learned some lessons from Yoda about, you know, judging things
size
or people or whatever by their size.
Matters not.
You can lift an X-Wing out of a swamp with just your mind if you just believe it enough. And he probably passed that on to Grogu. So I like it. I like it a lot.
It's a great visual. Great. Again, the music is like at a fucking max swell. I thought this was a pretty goddamn good finale, but... Because this is a pretty much the end. Everything else is an epilogue.
You're right. So let's get to that. The Mandalorians perform a ceremony at the Waters of the Minds of Mandalore to make Paz's son, Ragnar, a true Mandalorian. And Mando wants to do the same with Grogu, but he can't speak, so he can't take the creed. But he can become a Mandalorian apprentice if his parents say so.
But what if his parents signed a permission slip?
Mm-hmm.
This is the way. Crossing our T's and dotting our I's is the Mandalorian way.
So at this point, I thought, oh, well, the next season is going to be them searching for Grogu's parents, right?
Oh,
like,
really?
Can we go find them to get permission? Nope. Mando adopts Grogu and becomes Din Grogu.
Yeah, Din's the last name.
Mm-hmm. Does that mean that Bo is the last name and Paz was the last name?
Okay. We got Boba and Jango Fett.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I don't know. But the thing is like, the Mandalorian culture seems to be kind of, like, not so much about genetics and geography, but more about, like,
belief
a culture and a creed. I think that maybe there's room for other cultural traditions in terms of naming. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. Because the canonical one, Boba Fett, Dad Jango Fett, certainly doesn't follow that. But I don't know, Grogu Jaren. And I never liked the idea of... That's why I always keep calling him Mando, because I've heard recaps where they refer to him as Din. Now, that seems stupid. Din goes here, Din goes there.
Knowing that it's his surname.
Right. Mr. Din. He's Mr. Din to you. Jaren's actually a much better. I might start calling
Mr. him Din's
Jaren.
His dad.
Please, Jaren. Please. Mr. Din is. Just call me Jaren. Jar Jar. That's what my friends call me.
Oh, God.
So
what? There's another jar? What?
I had an equally naive thought that, there's going to have to be more character development. Like, he can't take the creed unless he can speak. This is, and actually, this actually makes a lot of sense. Like, you know, they don't practice infant baptism because what the fuck does that mean, right? You know?
Well, some religions do.
Well, I'm just saying, like,
specifically the Mandos, yeah.
Yeah, I was raised in a culture that didn't do infant baptism. Of course, it always made sense to me. Like, why would you get baptized if you don't even know what you're dedicating yourself to? So they're doing that, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So we're, you know, we had a little hint that there's some vocalizations going on with Grogu, and in a season or two, he'll be speaking, and then won't that be a moment when he finally takes the creed and puts on the helmet? Mm-hmm. Or rejects his father's tradition. Like, that'll be interesting, too. I don't know. Maybe it's a little disappointing that they're just like, oh, well, you're just his dad, so sign a permission slip. And, oh, well, don't worry about the helmet either.
Yeah. I mean, it is getting pretty far afield from what the Mandos have been up to now.
But they're all they're now like all united. Some of them are not wearing masks. Some of the armor and Bo-Katan reuniting the forge. She's not masked. She was not masked. She is masked. So like they are, again, none of that stuff matters in this moment. And that might even be realistic, and that sides that might hate each other would join together against a common external threat. And if in future seasons they develop this, they're like, there is an uneasy peace after Mandalore, and there are, you know, religious extremists, and there are, you know, other Mandalorians that are not respecting the old cultures and provoking things, like, that would be kind of cool. But I think that they're just going to like, nope, it's just everything's settled.
Yeah, I like the idea of this synthesis of the belief systems here into one, but I don't necessarily like the way they've told that story. There has not been a conversation about it so much as it has just been a necessity for the situation.
And I think that's something we could use today, like people with strong personal cultural differences that are ultimately like meaningless. Like if you want to wear a particular piece of religious clothing, if you want to cover your hair, if you want to, and there's like, it's not even just a fit, like, you know, what is that sect that is the Sikhs? Like it's the masculine that elaborately braids and hides their hair as their glory from the world, right? So it's like, I don't have any problem with that. But like, when you have people that are like, no, you have to do this to be holy, no, you have to do this, and they're mutually contradictory, that tension has to be resolved.
Sure.
Like, there needs to be Mandalorians having a conversation about like, well, it's a personal choice and it's between you and Mandalore, and the Mythosaur smiles on us. I don't know, but I would like to see them do that, because I think that would be a good example for kids today to like, you can have strongly, you can hold strong convictions and personal beliefs that you draw strength from, and your friends and other members of your family and community don't, and they can have equally valid strengths. And modeling that kind of like multicultural, I think would be cool for a show like this. And I think it's a missed opportunity if they don't lean into that.
I'm with you. I'm just wondering if maybe they think they've already done it.
The worst timeline, because they're just wrong. Right. They're stupid.
Right.
They're stupid. Like, this would not solve even a school grade dispute over religion.
Sure.
Like a playground dispute over religion, let alone something that's caused a planet to be ripped in half before. So, that'd be a huge disappointment. I would count that as a missed opportunity.
For sure. They make the son thing official. I mean, it always felt like semi-official to me.
Yeah, multiple people talk about him being his boy, and you need to listen to your dad, and like, so yeah, this is just putting an official,
but only official in the minds of the Mandalorians, right? Like, this doesn't hold up in the New Republic legally,
because there's not actually a permission slip, and there's no documentation happening here.
Also, Grogu can't give consent for this.
True.
What if Grogu doesn't want it to be his dad? You know, I want to go find my parents.
He just deatomized him with the Force. It's funny because like, this is the one baby in the world that probably has full agency, because like, what the fuck are you going to do to make Grogu do something he doesn't want?
Right.
He just resisted the force of a sun. Mm-hmm. Like S-U-N, you know? Like, yeah, no. Like, he can make his consent be heard. If you touch him in a way he doesn't like, he'll just rip you in half. Okay?
Fair. Then Bo gets the honor of relighting the Great Forge. It's a big moment for her.
Oh, yeah. The Mandos go crazy for it. They're all banging their wrists and they're shouting and masked and, mm-hmm. and unmasked alike.
This forge isn't as big as I was expecting. It's still, here's the thing about the Great Forge. It still has to be usable size. You can't have it be, you know, half a mile across. That wouldn't make much sense.
When she said hundreds of armorers, I was thinking a much bigger forge instead of three relatively big forges. Because I was counting, yeah. I'm like, the jets of flame, I assume, are like each individual side jet is something an armorer could use to forge the steel. So like maybe you could get hundreds around, but like I kind of agree.
You could probably get dozens around, and then, you know, some of them will be using heat while some of them are banging away with a hammer to shape it and...
I thought the Great Forge would be like 100 times bigger than the Armorer's Forge, and it's like 10 times bigger divided by 3.
It's like three times bigger, but there are several of them.
It's the pretty good Forge of Mandalore. I don't know about great.
I don't know. It's all right.
It's a decent. It's decent. It's decent size.
And then we go.
No one would say it's small.
No, of course not.
No.
First thing Dad does with his new son is take him to a bar on Navarro. He's thanked.
Not just any bar, a rough border town bar where they got heads of their vanquished enemies displayed over the bar.
Yep. He's thanked by Carson Teva for taking out Gideon, and Mando offers to do some work some bounties for the New Republic on a case-by-case basis. Grogu spots an IG droid head, and Mando takes it as advance payment on that bounty work. He is the Cara Dune, I guess. He is what they were probably going to make her.
I think IG-11 is actually the Cara Dune. I always thought that the New Republic Marshal was going to be Navarro and kind of like that type of deal. But
I suppose so. And then we go over to...
I want to say that like this is a smart setup because being off the books, obviously the New Republic's going to be doing some dirty, despicable shit. And like doing a case-by-case, off the books... independent contractors a good way to keep Mando's hands clean while he can still plausibly work with the quote-unquote good guys of the setting.
Yeah, I don't mind it. It does kind of rewind back to where we were at the beginning of season one.
Except,
and I think that's good.
There's been so much development. Like, Grogu's now like a quasi-Jedi. He's also inducted in the ways of the Mandalore. Like, they fully embraced her. Like, there's been a lot. That's what's frustrating when I saw this, they hit the reset button.
No. I'm not trying to say that.
Okay.
But tons of stuff has happened. It's now we're in a scenario where the plot is not moving forward because of something that Mando and Grogu have to do. The plot's gonna come to them.
Yes.
Right.
And I think the return of the format is fine because the format continues to it just generates character development, right? So, like, I'd have been frustrated because when I saw everyone saying hit the reset button, I got really scared when Grogu got separated from Mando because I thought, oh, God, Moff Gideon's going to kidnap Baby Yoda and we're going to have a whole fucking season. And I'm like, that to me would be hitting the reset button. Like, we're literally going to replay the shit that we did with no, like, you know, Grogu hasn't advanced. I think that taking their relationship into... you know, season four with the same old, essentially, I need this. You need to do a mission to do that. And like, you know, now that Grogu and him are kind of fighting as a unit now, that's going to be a lot. That's going to be really interesting. Grogu is going to be in a lot more overt danger, which is going to be interesting. I thought it was weird that as so many people are saying it's hitting the reset button on the series, because I don't think that's true.
No, I mean, it's dealt with Gideon. It's united the Mandos. They're back on Mandalore. Like, there's tons of stuff that is developed here. And I think, you know, the shame of it, I assume, is going to be when we come back in season four. me not having watched Ahsoka, probably, depending on the reputation it gets.
I'm going to give it 3 episodes.
I'm gonna let other people give it some episodes, like I did with Obi-Wan. And see
or
what
Andor.
I think.
Andor,
and then I went back and I watched all of Andor because it was good.
Yeah, I said it was good. And I, like I said, I just hope they don't fuck up Thrawn, because to me, Thrawn was the best of the Star Wars, you know, the Apocrypha. An Heir to the Empire is the thing that kind of like made Star Wars relevant to me, as like, you know, because I was like 13 going on 14 and I was about to get my head turned by other things. And right when I could have become a full rounded individual, Star Wars came back to reclaim me as a nerd and captured my youth and my young adulthood. So like that's really important to me that they don't fuck up Thrawn, that he's not just a villain of the season.
Right. I hope they don't mess up his story. I think it's going to be choppy, though, because what I expect to happen is much like they did with Grogu and Mando in Book of Boba Fett. I expect a lot of this stuff to happen in Ahsoka.
And that might be appropriate.
Us to come back in season 4 and be just kind of in the middle of things and not and have to go back and watch those episodes.
Well, that might be appropriate, because I understand that there is history between Ahsoka and Thrawn, which they will make clear in the fucking series. I don't need to watch 17 hours of cartoons. Like they'll either do that or it'll be a shitty show. Okay.
Will they? I mean, that's the thing. I don't trust that they will do any of that stuff because of what they did with Book of Boba Fett.
I don't think Book of Boba Fett suffered from throwing you into a situation you didn't understand. It was just a bad story.
No, and what I'm saying is Book of Boba Fett did some off-screen stuff with Mando that you absolutely needed
to
know.
Okay, so like that's where I was getting with that. There's nothing intrinsic to Mandalorian's story that says that he needs to be deeply involved in Grand Admiral Thrawn. Grand Admiral Thrawn can be like the big bad villain of, you know, like, oh, these are Thrawn's forces and all of that. But like if Ahsoka has personal business, yes, they do have to explain that to us that haven't watched the cartoons to be a good piece of entertainment. And I think they will. But they do need to, I you know, like I said, to the extent that that's a valid complaint for the people who are not watching all of Star Wars, I do think they need to get better. They need to find, like Marvel did so well, what are the things that are important to the individual characters and their shows and their movies, and what are things that we can share. They need explicit team-up series where they can kind of bring everything together, like the Avengers. And I know that Fellini has got plans for a movie that's going to do that, just going to, like, you know, unify all of the Disney Plus Star Wars universe stuff. And that's the plan going forward. And I definitely felt that. Like I said, I admire the fact that they're trying to take this canon that was handed to them by other people and wrangle it to something that they can use. But yeah, I don't know. But sure, like I said, I'm going to give Ahsoka a couple. I like Rosario Dawson. I don't have any, like I said, I don't hate the cartoons and their characters. It's just, the simple fact is I just don't have the time, to go. And I always find when people say, just watch these 4 episodes, and I did that once in season 1 and I walked away kind of disappointed. So for a millionth time, I don't give a shit about the cartoons, but yeah,
I just hope they connect. They don't leave a lot of dots that need to be connected with stuff that isn't going to be in the series. Mainline stuff.
Well, I do think also that like this is the turn of the tide. Like we are about to see, like I think over the next year, over 2023, early 2024, we're going to see if the double F's got the stuff to start, you know, like there can be a misstep here and there, but you can't do anymore. Like you can't do a sequel trilogy. You can't like squander that much potential. You can't do an Obi-Wan series. You can't do a Book of Boba. Like You gotta have everything confident and competent this going forward.
I hear
so Ahsoka is
going to
be a real test
written.
For me.
I hear the season 4 of Mando is already written, which both fills me with hope and also trepidation, because that to me implies that they are intertwining these pretty closely.
Well, yeah. I mean, they
could be good and could be bad.
Like, we know they are making a movie that's going to closely tie them together. So, like, and I don't mind that. It's, again, they cannot reunite father and son in some other show.
Sure.
You know, that's the thing. So, if they can avoid doing stuff like basic stuff like that, I think Because I don't think anyone would be pissed if Mando just showed up as like a 2-episode run where they dealt with like, you know, him trying to be a Mandalorian again. And they saved the reunion for like season 1 of Mandalorian, right? Or season 3 of Mandalorian, the premiere. It's like not that the Mando was in Boba. It's just that the connection of him and his son was in Boba.
Right, right.
But
yeah, I want that stuff that's important to the characters to be in their show. Anyway, we kind of didn't recap these scenes, but we've talked past them a little. Greef gives Mando some land in a cabin on the outskirts of Navarro. And in return, Mando gives a gift of the newly repaired IG-11 to Greef. And then Mando just chills with Grogu on his new property.
I continue to love what they're doing with droids in this show, because like IG-11 stomp around. I am your new marshal. I am at your disposal. I serve only at your pleasure. I have consciousness, but no free will. My existence is horror. Like, dude, it's so weird. It's so weird. Like, even with Captain Teeb at the bar, is like, oh, he thinks that's his friend. Turns, you know, he's been piloting his hollowed out corpse for the last episode or two. So, you know, you can see how the mistake is easy to make. It's just wild. Mm-hmm. It's wild. Do you think they'll ever deal with that?
No. I don't. Well, I don't know. There was that episode on Coruscant where we see the bar full of droids, which encourages me a little bit that they're thinking about those things, but not to the degree where they would go back and address this again.
They're going to be the house elves of Harry Potter. You just don't think about it too much.
I have no idea.
Not for long. Not for long. Counting down the weeks until Jim sees a Harry Potter film, thanks to some mad commissioner. It's going to be glorious.
I don't know. I've been thinking about maybe not doing commissions again.
Rage quitting commissions. That would actually be so on brand for the Jim Jones brand.
Yeah.
So
anyway, that's it, man. Another season of Mando in the books.
I love how it ended. The actual like Mando on his little bungalow, resting on the front porch, watching his son play in the front yard.
That's a life, man. That's nice.
Did you think it was character development that Grogu is playing with the frog and not eating
it? Instead of eating it. Yeah, a little bit.
Starting to get balance of the force.
Yeah, I still have a real problem with Grogu torturing small animals at every chance he gets.
They need to cut that out, maybe.
But they're playing it as like super cute, and I just think, like, what is the experience of this frog right now?
Sure.
It fucking sucks. It's having its legs pulled apart, floating in midair. It's terrible.
But what is the experience of a frog, really?
Yeah.
We got feedback.
All right.
Oh, before we do the feedback, mando@baldmove.com is where you want to send feedback, by the way. I had a question. Are we going to do a wrap-up for this show?
I think so, yeah. We have it in the schedule.
Okay. We'll see how much feedback, because I have like a germ of an idea of something, because I'd like to, like, the things we're looking forward to in season 4. And that's what I'd like to talk about in the recap. Like, what are things you think that Mando has to do to go confidently forward in season 4? Like, one of my big ones is going to be he needs a new ship.
Okay.
I think the Mandalorian needs a new ship. But like things like that. Like, what do you think? Like, what are you hoping for? Are you hoping in season 4 Yoda, Baby Yoda, Grogu, Din Grogu gets his gets his helmet? What are we hoping for? What are our hopes? What are our fears for season 4 of The Mandalorian? Send that in to mando@baldmove.com. Joe from Indy's up first. He says, I'm hearing you guys, mainly Jim, ranting for 5 minutes about what the service they did to the newly upgraded Dark Troopers compared to Dark Troopers throughout season 2. It's because they weren't Dark Troopers at all.
Apparently.
This is you already came correct on this, so you scooped Joe, but Joe is a cadre of loyal Dark Trooper fans that were correcting us here.
Yeah, my bad.
He also said we talked about the troopers in white being a mix of Mandalorians, Jedi, and clone troopers made them less impressive, but again, that's not the troopers in the white armor either. That hybrid is Gideon's master plan to build an unstoppable army to take control of the Empire and conquer the galaxy, which he doesn't have the army yet. I think that's what I found confusing, is he freely talked about things that were actually existing, like, behold the newest version of the Dark Trooper, and the best part of it is I'm in it. But then he also talks about the best parts of incorporating the best parts of the Jedi and the Mandalorians and the clone troopers. So it's like,
Which
I guess I thought that referred to. But again, I just thought he was like the general variant of, like, he's like the super version of a battle droid, right?
Sure.
And the white stormtroopers were the droid soldiers, whatever. So anyway, Jim stepped on your dick there, Joe, for Mindy. Sorry about that. That's what happens. Let's move on to Christine. Says, just want to add to your Thrawn convo that Lars, who is going to be starring as Thrawn in the Ahsoka series, was the original voice of Thrawn in the cartoons. You check out Ahsoka trailer, we get a shot of the back of his head. I heard at the Star Wars Celebration last week that people got a full frontal shot too. Whoa!
Hey now.
Haven't seen that much blue dong since The Watchmen. Full frontal shot of Grand Admiral Thrawn. I tell you what, Star Wars Celebration working blue in more ways than one.
That's a hell of an introduction. Right? Wow.
This went full Dirk Diggler. Mm-hmm. Just pulled it out in front of the hollow mirror and said, look, you're a shining star. Ahsoka actually called him heir to the Empire in a trailer, and my inner 90s child screamed. Yeah, that's pretty great. Mm-hmm. They also confirmed that there will be a Filoni directed movie that's in game of the Mandoverse story. I'm so freaking pumped that we're getting Legends characters on the big screen. Dave and John are great at picking up elements from all mediums of Star Wars and bringing them to the fold. Sure, they can get a little silly here and there, but I'm for it. Take care. Yeah, like I said, I've got high hopes for the double Fs. I am freaking pumped to get Grand Admiral Thrawn on the big screen. When they say the end game, I guess that doesn't mean it's the end of the Mandoverse. Although, how much longer does the Mandoverse have if it's going to be the Mando? Because, like, I just can't see. Does Pedro Pascal just keep doing this forever? Because he just has to spend, like, a day at Lucas.
Yeah, he's just doing the voiceover.
At Skywalker Ranch. He does, like, 2-3 days of dub work, and he's out.
Yeah, I don't know. Especially when they have these scripts so far in advance, I don't know why you wouldn't continue to do it. It's probably a pretty big paycheck for the amount of work he's doing.
I saw Alan Sepinwall, seemed like this was a lot of cope, but he was saying that he thought that now that Pedro is going to be in between the Last of Us filming that for season 4, that though, because he thought it's like we'd get a shot of him taking his helmet off this season if it weren't for him being so busy with the Last of Us. I don't know. I thought it'd been weird for him to take his helmet off on the season where he redeemed himself at the midpoint.
Yeah, his whole thing is he's going to the waters of Mando and he's going to take his helmet off again. I mean,
yeah, but I don't know. Now that we see Mandalorians that could take their helmets off and they're kind of like splitting the cultural difference there, I could see. But I also see them after the movie wrapping things up and being like, well, this is a run, but Pedro Pascal is one of them shooting stars and can't capture him forever. Leone from Clydebank, Scotland says, does anyone else think the armorer is a spy? I thought it's suspicious that she was conveniently not the Mandalorians when they were ambushed. It also explained how the armorer was so cool with the removal of the helmets. Potentially she could be trying to bring all the Mandalorians left to the galaxy together so the Moff can wipe them out in one go. I'm not a Star Wars expert, so I have no idea why.
It didn't feel like that to me. It felt like Gideon was worried about the Mandos coming together.
I have watched the Star Wars movies, but can really only enjoy the first three. I literally started watching The Mandalorian because I love Bald Move and Pedro Pascal. Well, that's a good reason. If you want to be a Star Wars expert, all you got to do is you got to go watch The Caravan of Courage. That and the original trilogy, you will be able to win any bar fight against a entrenched Star Wars fan.
Sure. Make sure it's the original theatrical version, though, and not the special editions, because that gives you twice the power.
So obviously this theory, new shit has come to light since they sent it in. What do you think? Do you think the armor could? Because like I got a smattering of emails saying that the armor is suspicious, that armor is going to be someone well established from the lore, or she's going to have a hidden agenda. I thought there was maybe some legs to this theory because it does seem something like that she would do to like, but I don't know, like betraying betraying them to Moff Gideon. That's where I always, like, anytime since people suggested that Mandalorians were working willingly with Moff Gideon, it's like, that seems really tough to swallow. He was the guy who glassed your planet in living memory.
Yeah, and everything that was happening on screen made it seem like Gideon was dismayed that the Mandalorians were coming together. They were his biggest threat. Mm-hmm. He didn't like it at all. I don't think the armor was a spy. I don't think
if there was an inside person, he would probably obliquely reference to like a person on the inside or an ace.
He wouldn't be worried, right? He'd be like, yes, my master plan is coming together. Right, it's time to rally my troops and yeah, do what I expected to do. Yeah. He doesn't say anything like that. It's the exact opposite. And the other thing is a lot of people were on the Axe as a spy train, right? Like, oh my God, Axe is working for Gideon.
Sure.
So like, you know,
true blue son of Mandalore, turns out.
Everybody thought everybody was a spy because there was an episode titled The Spies.
The Spy, yeah.
Right. And none of that came to pass, apparently.
I mean, there's lots of spies. We've seen lots of spies, but I think it wasn't implying anything more.
Right.
So I agree. But, you know, you watch Caravan of Courage, you'll get that gut feeling built up to where you'll be able to finally distinguish those fine pieces of Star Wars lore and canon like we do here.
And if they wanted you to know anything about that, the one thing that surprised me about this season finale, really, aside from like not doing any of the things people expected, is having no post-credits stinger. Like, not setting up the next plot, just letting them sit. Yeah, I looked for it. I was like, okay, there's got to be something. And I fast-forwarded 10 seconds at a time all the way through that thing. Mm-hmm. Nothing. To me, that is strange. And if they were ever going to tell you, oh, there was a spy in the ranks and this was all part of a plan, that's when they would have done it.
I think it's time for post-credit scenes to start being a rare treat again. Like, they should feel momentous. Like, maybe 1 out of 10, 1 out of 30 it's like something where your buddies are like, back in the day, most people would walk out of theater and then their buddies would be like, oh my God, did you see blah, blah, blah? Nah, fuck, I was already at Steak and Shake. Oh my God, this thing happened. We need to get back to that. I hate the 2 and 3 and the mid credits and the post fancy credits and the post credits. And it's shit. And we need to stop doing it.
I think we should make them all bloopers again.
I like bloopers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, if you want to do something funny, like having the Avengers eating shawarma, fine. But like, no, no villains are allowed to be established. No new heroes are allowed to be introduced. No crossover characters teased. That's this shit is cringe. Stop doing it.
I've been on that train since like 2012.
Yeah, it's true. He's steadfastly refused to stay.
I never watch him. I always walk out. Always.
He does.
I will watch the ones that come up immediately as the credits start. Like, if you give me under 30 seconds of credits and then you hit me with something, I'll watch that. But I'm not sitting through your entire fucking credit sequence.
Ayman says, just wanted to provide a bit of advice for Domhnall Hall's name. Classic Irish names just don't sound anything like they're spelled. You say it as Donal, like tonal.
Donal Gleason.
Donal Gleason. Well, I gotta say, Ayman, I had to look up your name because I'm like, this would be really fucking, speaking of cringe, it'd be ultra cringe to mispronounce a Scottish man's name when he's correcting you on the pronunciation of a Scottish man's name. Mm-hmm, so fortunately, I punched it in and knew it was Ayman and not Eamon. Because I would have definitely gone with Eamon if I had to look that up. So it doesn't take too much to confuse my tongue, but God damn, Irish and Scottish, they really do twist a tongue.
Sure.
That's it. That's it for the Mando for this week. That's it for the Mando for this season. We will be back next week to do, it's as brief as you want it to be. Send in all your hopes and fears and your dreams, your nitpicks, your thoughts and opinions on this season of Mandalorian and what you're looking forward to or looking forward to avoid in season 4. Sell us on Ahsoka. I'm sold. If you want to try to sell Jim on Ahsoka, please do that as well. Mando@baldmove.com is where you want to send all those thoughts. If this is your end with Bald Move, I would say it's just the beginning. continue your journey at twitter.com/baldmove to keep up with everything that we're doing in the meantime. We just wrapped up Picard. We're still going strong with Yellow Jackets. We are looking forward to a lot of shows coming back this year. Severance, Foundation. I'm really curious to check out that Mrs. Davis that just came out. I'm hearing some good early buzz on that. We do tons of stuff. We got Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Fast X in the weeks ahead. Tons of stuff. You want to follow it at twitter.com/baldmove. Also, if you like our pulpy stuff, if you like our sci-fi, fantasy, zombie type stuff, go ahead and check out Bald Move Pulp on your favorite podcast app. And that way you can ensure that you don't miss any of our conversations around these things. Finally, this has been a repeat journey and you keep coming back and you keep coming back, you might want to join our club. You'll get tons of bonus content. And you can skip all the ads as we have ad-free feeds exclusively for club members. Support.baldmove.com.
That's where we do our full frontal reveals.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. We only show the backside on the public.
I always show
that's
my
actually
backside,
a reason to not subscribe. But, you're really undercutting our peel here. Support.baldmove.com for the hideousness of our full frontal. That's it. We'll be back next week for a wrap-up podcast for Mando. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
This is the way, I guess. Helmets, no helmets. It's optional.